welcome to this week's In Addition. My name is Daniel Calkins. I'm a pastor here of The Next Generation. Joining me today is Pastor John Keller. He's the pastor of Leadership and Discipleship, no. I believe. No? No?
Not Preaching and easy. Leadership Development.
Very well.
Check the website.
WorthgateFMC.com. We're both tired and fresh off Kingdom Bound this week, and we thank you for joining us today. And just got a few questions for you, John, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's it. We're jumping in.
You're jumping in.
This is good. We're tanning while we do this. The lights are really high. It's going to be, I'm going to be a nice, crisp, burned red by the time we're done.
It'll be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. So
you're committed to getting right into those questions. Let's go.
The less I talk, the better this will go. Yeah. I just want to ask you, have you ever sacrificed something in your life in order to make it better? Obviously, in the Christian faith, sacrifice is a something that Jesus asks us to do. He requires us to do. And I think he requires us to continually examine our lives. Once we think we've sacrificed enough for him, there's always one more level you can go, one more thing that you can sacrifice. So how do you feel about something that you've sacrificed in your life? And how did you feel at the time? Was it easy? Was it difficult?
I didn't like it.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, sacrifice is bad.
It's not bad. It's hard, though, right? I mean, that's the essence of sacrifice is that it's always going to be hard. It's always, if it's not, it's not a sacrifice. So the thing that really came to mind, and this isn't like an overly spiritual thing, but it was, a question as far as something that I've sacrificed was I had the opportunity in 2013 to write for a site with ESPN Boston. So lifelong Red Sox fan, my only goal as a child growing up was to be like a sports writer, sports anchor, something like that. And I, through some crazy chances, had an opportunity to do that. And I spent an entire year writing columns about the Red Sox. So every Thursday I would have a column come out, feature column, spent a lot of time on it. And around that time, in August of 2013, is when Pastor Vern came to Northgate, or came back. And one of the changes he made, I was at our South Campus at the time, and he said, I want you to preach. And so I went from preaching like once a month to preaching every week, like 42, 44 times in a year. And so I was trying to generate a column and a sermon every week. And I did that for a little while. I did it for all of 2013 for the season. And people may have forgotten we won the World Series that year. It's important to note. And it was awesome. It was a lifelong goal. But I got into 2014, and I found myself that to write a column, it had to come either at the expense of the church and my messages I was working on, or I was doing that on my day off at home when I was with the girls. And I'm pushing them to the side so I can write this column. And I did it for a little bit, and I realized, it was something I really enjoyed doing, but ultimately that was not going to be a long-term career thing. It was not as important as preaching a great message that weekend or being a really good dad. So I stepped back. I had done it for a little. It was like early 2014 where I had to step back from that. And it was a sacrifice because it was something that I always wanted to do, and it was really meaningful. I really enjoyed it. But ultimately for me, and I feel like I'm always weighing these things out, it came down to what's most important. And for me, it's my family and the church. And it's a long way to third after those two things.
Yeah. Way to tie it up with a baseball reference there.
It's all about baseball. everything comes back to baseball.
Absolutely. I like that you brought kids into it, because I think a lot of times before we have kids, or at least before I had kids, you don't really have your worldview is very centered on yourself and like the things that you want in your life. And actually, just the other day, I was looking back at videos of my son Ezra. He's 3 now, and just from like a year ago, how much has changed and how much has passed. And I remember saying to myself down there in the basement when I was looking at these pictures, he was never going to be that age again. All those memories, the things that he did and the things that he was and the person that he was, he's never going to be that person again.
Yeah.
So, and I think for a long time, I always had the feeling that I can push this off. I can always, my kids are always going to be there. I can always be able to see them, but I'm never going to be able to see him again at 3 years old.
Right.
So any time that we, sacrifice out of their lives, is time that we're never going to get back.
Yeah.
And I think that really hit me the other day.
And I think parenting is a great it's a great educator on sacrifice, isn't it? I mean, I think in a lot of ways, marriage isn't all sacrifice, but I think if it's not any sacrifice, you're probably not doing it that well. And parenting is a lot of sacrifice, especially, I'm sure, as they get older too, but when they're young, where you're constantly putting someone else's needs before yours. And I think that's part of, you know, for a lot of us, that's part of a discipleship plan God puts us on. It's to say, okay, you think everything's about you? Well, I'm going to have a wife and couple kids, and we'll check back in and see how much better you are about everything not being about you all the time.
Absolutely. So we've established that sacrifice is difficult at the beginning, but how can you, you know, exegete how it feels after the fact, after you've done the sacrifice, gone through it, walked through it a little bit? Is it a steep climb? Does it get easier as you go on? And how do you feel when it's done?
I mean, I think that's probably case to case. I think it's always to start it is the hardest, right? I think for me in that situation, it was the hardest to tell the people that ran the site, I'm not gonna do this. But as I found myself able to focus more on work at work and focus on home at home, then I felt like, okay, I knew I made the right decision. I'm super black and white, probably to a fault, where if I decide, you know what, it's the right thing for me not to do this, I'm going to push it aside, and then I don't look back a lot. So I just have to, for me, I have to like get over that hump. It's like, you know, the first ride on the Superman, because we were just at Kingdom Bound, where you like get over there and it's like, okay, once I've done that, once I've made that decision and I've said, this is what I really need to do, this is what I need to sacrifice, this is, you know, what I need to lay down right now. For me, that's so much of the battle, because I'm pretty strong-willed, which is a nicer way of saying stubborn. And so once I've like decided this is what I have to do, then I'm pretty committed to doing it most of the time.
Yeah.
But then once you start to see the rewards and the benefits of it, like I grew a ton as a preacher in those 2 years, you know, I had a lot of opportunities to preach. And so I don't think that would have happened if I had held on to this other thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That wasn't as important.
I like that you said it's different in any case, because I hadn't really thought about that, that the sacrifice that you might make for your family seemingly yields a lot of grapefruit. You have good kids and you have...
Did you say grapefruit?
Yeah. Maybe. I'm kind of hungry.
Not for grapefruit. Is that even a food?
The grapefruit diet.
Yeah.
And you like, you rear these good kids and you have this product at the end where like sacrifice and addiction or something seems like it's continually this uphill climb, that although it might get better and you develop the behaviors that allow you to not do the thing that you don't want to do, but it seems from talking to people, it's just as hard as the first day as it is the last day.
Yeah, I think as someone that's wrestled with addiction, I think the beginning, you know, when you're like, and you almost, I always caution people, like, just tell people I'm not going to drink today. You know, because if you say, I'm never drinking again, and you've been the one that's drank all the time, like, that's a hard thing to do. So I think the beginning is hard, but I think so much of that is the structures that you put around you, you know. I mean, I've said that. I'm not sure that I'm any stronger than I was 10 years ago. I'm smarter about a lot of stuff. You know, I don't have access to things that I know I can't handle. And so I just try and make sure that instead of being like, oh, man, I'm going to be super strong-willed, right? I don't have cable. I don't have pay channels. I don't have anything. And so that way I don't need to be strong, right? I just need to be smart and stay away from those things. And so I'm not in the situations that I was, you know, 15 years ago with alcohol. So part of that is like, do I have an opportunity to do it? Sure, if I really wanted to, I could. But I try to be smarter about the settings I'm in. So in that way, I think it gets easier. But it's I think that's, and for a lot of people, it is a regular everyday battle. You know, I've seen people be sober for 3-4 years and fall back. And so it's, you know, it's one day at a time. And as soon as you put your guard down, that could be the day.
Yeah. And the world's really good at tricking us into thinking that we can handle it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you necessarily don't need an external source such as God or something like that in order to fight this. The evil in this world is very good at tricking you into thinking that either your amount is not an issue, or that that you can handle this on your own, or that it's not even a problem to begin with,
right?
Because everybody does it.
Well, I've had 3 times where I stopped drinking, third time being the last time. And the first 2 times, both times, I allowed the devil, I allowed, you know, my own flesh, whatever it was, to convince me that if I started drinking again this time, it would be different. like, well, that's what happened before, but this, you're older, you're wiser. And finally, that third and final time was just never again. You know, like, I can't. I know how this goes. I've seen this show before. So we fall for that. We think, like, well, I'm more mature now. Like, I couldn't handle that before, but now, and then we find out that when we allow ourselves to be, you know, in those same situations, we're going to end up with the same results.
Yeah. The devil's in it for the long game.
He's yeah, right.
Short time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a good segue for us. I think in a church, we're really focused on comfort. We want to make people comfortable. If they're not comfortable, they're not going to walk through those doors, especially if they feel they're not going to be welcomed into a church. And I think we've talked about in the past, and in addition, how Northgate, we try and we hope that it's a welcoming community, that anybody that walks through those doors, they know that they have the opportunity to meet with Jesus and to be saved by his grace.
Mm-hmm.
And we continually are working on that culture and trying to make sure that is known. For a long time, Christians have been known as a very exclusive culture, kind of like a club that unless you meet our criteria that we've set for you.
You have to become like us to be one of us.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think that that's one of the most, you know, horrible things that we've built up as a culture and that we're trying to change. But living in a culture of comfort, especially in America, how do you feel that, how do we have to overcome that comfort? And like, what can we primarily change about this culture in order to make it more comfortable with sacrifice?
Make sacrifice
a comfortable thing.
Comfortable sacrifice. Well, I think one of the things, whether we're talking about church or we're talking about American culture or our lives in general, is like we become so comfortable, and it's good. I want, you know, I love being comfortable, but it doesn't lead to me relying on God that much. You know, I mean, compare how much faith it takes for me to get up today and to say, okay, God, you know, give us this day our daily bread, when I have like endless supplies of food in my house and money to go. I could just decide I don't want to eat any of that food. Let's go to a restaurant instead, right? I mean, it's not that I don't trust God for my provision. It's just it becomes a lot easier to not rely on him versus somebody in Gahanda who has maybe this morning literally nothing to eat, and they're saying, God, I trust you to provide and to get me and my family through the day. I mean, the amounts of faith that we need to have to face our day is just so separate. And so what I see for us so often is, and we see it here all the time with people, is we go through the motions and we're doing our stuff and we've like, God, I've got this, it's good, until we get like our backs to the wall. And then it's just like, oh man, all right, okay, God, okay, I need you to take it. You jump in. You know, I told this story the first time that I preached here when I guest preached, so it was like 2010. You weren't here, so I'm going to tell you again. When I first learned to drive standard, we got this car, and my dad, I kind of knew, but I couldn't do it. I just knew how to do it. And he left me at the dealership and just drove home in the other car. Yeah. So I drove this car. It took me like an hour to get home. It was like 20 minutes away. The next day, I felt like, okay, I'm good enough. I can drive to school. And I drove to school. And as I'm leaving school, there's this huge hill. And we're sitting there on the hill. Got one of my best friends with me. And I start to let out of the clutch. And, you know, I'm rolling back down the hill. And there's cars behind me. There's a line of kids leaving school. And I kept trying until it was about an inch from the bumper in front of me. People are backing up. I finally throw the emergency brake on and I get out. And my friend Chris runs around and he got in because he was a better driver than me. And I did it right up until I couldn't do anymore. And then I was like, okay, I need help. I need you to do it. And like, that's how we approach God in a comfortable culture, is like, I got this. God, I got this. Stay over there until something really like strikes us down, until something just like nails us we didn't see coming, you know, like our spouse leaves or our kid gets really sick or, you know, we're diagnosed with something. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh man, God, I really need you now. And like, that's the benefit of comfort, is we can wake up most days and feel like, yeah, if God doesn't show up, I'll be just fine. And like, that's not true. Like, I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live as if I don't need God, but I also don't want to get to the spot where something terrible has to happen for me to actually rely on God. Yeah. And for me, that's the hazard of comfort and of having such a comfortable life.
Yeah, we live in a very genie God culture, right? We put God in a box until...
Or a bottle in that case.
Genie, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen Aladdin.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, genies don't come in boxes, do they?
Yeah.
And then we... you know, we call on them, we take them off the shelf when we need them.
Yeah.
When we think like, all right, I'm out of my earthly options.
Yeah.
When really it's God that's been holding you up that whole time.
Right. When we get the line like, well, all we can do now is pray. Which is like, I've said that too. Like, if people say that, I'm not throwing you under the bus on that. But like, that's our mentality. It's like, well, there's nothing I can physically do now, so all we can do is pray.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, we should have prayed first. Like, yeah. Let's start with prayer, and then we can try and do some other things.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times it's interesting because, like, through altar calls at camp or through just, you know, inviting people to join with Christ here, it seems like both a very easy choice to give your life mm-hmm. over to him, but also as you start getting deeper into Christianity, you feel the gravity of how big of a choice it actually
yeah.
is, because Jesus doesn't want a little piece of you. He wants the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, C.S. Lewis says that a lot of times we invite God into our house to, like, change a corridor. And we realize that he's knocking down walls and pushing things over and making this beautiful mansion that we never asked him to do.
Yeah.
But if we give him the power to do that, that's what he's going to do.
So, this has been your weekly C.S. Yeah. Lewis quote with Pastor Dan.
So following Christ is high. We both know
that. The
cost
is very high.
It's not an easy thing to do. It's not the, you know, you make a choice at camp and then you ride on cruise control the rest of your life. It's a continual sacrifice and looking for that next sacrifice that you can make to become, you know, more involved and letting Christ be more involved in your life. So what do you think is the cost of discipleship, essentially?
I think the cost is, it's the primary word I would use is continual. It's not a one-time cost. You know, it's not like, you know, for me, I thought when I really started to become a serious Christian, I thought, well, if I stop drinking, then that's, you know, it's good. God and I will hang out for the next, you know, 50, 60 years. Like, I thought, because that was such a glaring issue in my life. And then, you know, we started to get that taken care of, and it was like, we got to talk about your language. We got to talk about what you say, the jokes you make, you know, the way you talk. And it was like, oh, man, wow, that's a lot. And you start to deal with that stuff. And you start, eventually, if you walk with Christ and you really do try and sacrifice the things that you do, you get to the point where hopefully it's not actions even, and then you get to thoughts, mm-hmm. right? God's like, good, your actions are largely pretty good. You're acting like a Christ follower. This is what I want from you. Now let's start talking about what you thought, or how, you know, those things, or how you felt, how you reacted in that moment. And then this, like, opens up this whole additional world of, like, okay, now we're working on this. And I remember this one, my last church, this lady who was in her 90s, and I used to go visit her at the nursing home. She's a sweet lady. And she was, I mean, externally living a perfect life. I mean, she was a Christian woman. She read her Bible all the time. She prayed constantly. You know, she wasn't doing anything that you would look and be like, well, you know, a Christian shouldn't do that. And whenever I would ask her before we'd leave, I'd say, hey, how can I pray for you? And she would say, you know, can you pray for how I think about people? Sometimes I think so badly about people. And she would break down to tears. And I thought, you know, here's this woman that is doing nothing wrong, but she's gotten so close to Christ that the thoughts that go through her mind that aren't Christ-like break her heart, because that's how close that relationship has become. And I will always remember her, and just kind of the beauty of that, of saying, you know, the closer you get to that light, the more that's revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's, for me, that's where she was. She was around in the, you know, the home stretch of life, but there was still this one little spot in her life that she felt like, this isn't completely honoring to Christ, and it broke her heart that it wasn't there yet.
Exactly. Yeah, I always tell the kids in our youth group, you can clean the whole house, and it never looks perfect, and you don't see any dust, and then that light comes through the window, and you see all the dust particles floating
yeah,
in the air.
Right?
I bet that drives you nuts.
Yeah, it does drive me nuts, yeah.
Yeah, that you could have this perfect-looking house, but then you... Only through the light of, like, Jesus gives us in our lives, that we can see that dust in the air.
Yeah. I also have three kids and two chocolate labs, so
yeah.
I've given up on that. But when the light comes, you just see, like, the hair blowing around from the dogs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, dog hair. Oh, my word. So salvation is a free gift.
Do you want to talk more about dog hair?
Yeah. No, I'm good. I'm
okay.
Salvation is a free gift. But that doesn't mean there's not a cost.
Mm-hmm.
And like we talked before, the cost is, as you continually get more into Christianity, you realize that the cost is greater than we could even bear ourselves. And that, so it's like that dichotomy between, we have to you know, trust in Jesus fully through our own action, mm-hmm. but also allow him to just take it, you know, take it where he wants to go. So it's not only like Jesus doing all the work, but we have to do the work too, even mm-hmm. though he's the heavy lifter. Yeah.
Is there a question in there, or is it yeah. just making conversation? Yeah, so. No, I totally agree with everything you said, and I think that dichotomy, as you said, is such, it's one of the, if not the primary thing, I think that we really have to get our minds around to be Christ followers. If it's not primary, it's way up there, but it's that balance that, you know, it's not through anything we can do, that we can't earn that salvation. You know, that God doesn't love the two of us anymore today because we're pastors than he did, you know, 15, 20 years ago when we were having nothing to do with him. His love for us throughout that time has been constant. And so, like, getting that first half of it and saying, God loves you no matter what. God loves you just as you are. You're not good enough for him to love. He loves you regardless of what you've done. But then getting the second half of that, but because he loves you that much, he doesn't leave you as that same person. He doesn't just say, like, well, okay, you know, I guess we're stuck with this version of Daniel, you know, like, this is just who he is. And so that's when our part of the investment really comes in, and we say, okay, God, I understand this great love that you have for me, and I'm not trying to earn my salvation, but, you know, our works, what we do, how we live, does point to its existence. Mm-hmm. You know, it does show that it's there. And so it's always hard. I feel like every time when I'm preaching, I want to make that so clear to people so that we're not living, because you err either on too much of either one of those sides, it's terrible. If you think, I got to work hard enough so I go to heaven, and anytime I screw up, God doesn't love me anymore and I'm not a Christian anymore, like, that's a volatile, painful way to live. But it's also super dangerous and not, you know, valid Christianity to say, well, God loves me no matter what, so I'm just going to live however mm-hmm. I want to and do whatever I want. Like, those are both such bad extremes to live on. And there's that balance of the middle of saying it's a free gift, but because I'm going to do this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And that was a perfect answer. And as Jesus said, be perfect. So we thank you for joining us today. And in addition, it's every other week on Thursday. And thank you, Pastor John, for joining me. And we'll see you next time.
Good to be here.